And hello and welcome. This is KPGZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is County Connections. I'm Jim Burke, and my co-host today is Commissioner Kate Dean. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having us.
Oh, well, thanks for being here. We also have State Representative Steve Theringer with us.
Yeah. And hello.
I guess we're going to talk about some interesting things. But, Kate, I'll have you start asking the questions because you guys know what you're talking about today. I'm just a host.
Thanks for the confidence.
Sure.
Well, thanks so much, Steve, for being here today. Representative Theringer is such a champion for the 24th Legislative District, and I would say for Jefferson County in particular. And first off, how are you doing, Steve? It sounded like a grueling session. I heard about a lot of past midnight times on the floor, and have you recovered?
I've caught up. I think just the last couple of days caught up on my sleep. I found myself napping a lot during the middle of the day because we go, the last couple of weeks, we go pretty much 24/7 because I'm on the Appropriations Committee. I'm trying to develop a capital budget, and then we're trying to get stuff off the, you know, the floor of the House. So it starts at 7 and goes usually to about midnight or 1 for about 2 weeks. And that's kind of a grind, but a lot gets done, but it takes me a week to recover. But I think we'll find out. We'll see how I do today. But I think my cylinders are popping.
Great. Well, and, you know, we've been hearing a lot about something that didn't get done this session, which I'd love to hear your feedback on. The governor just called a special session for the end of the month to try and find some resolution on what we call the Blake fix. So do you want to describe that and describe how we got here and how you think the legislature is going to handle this important issue?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think it's an important question. So just a little history, the Blake decision, the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court 2 years ago, during the middle of the session, which was kind of a surprise to all of us in the legislature, basically legalized drugs. And it was based on the fact that a person had been arrested and had drugs on their person, but didn't know they had drugs on the person. And we were one of the few states that had made that a felony. So they determined that it was unconstitutional. But in that process, all drug possession became legal. So we put in a bill that expires actually this year, June 30th, that is not working, quite frankly. It had, you know, the police could arrest somebody, but for the first three arrests, they had to give them a piece of paper and then have them offering them to go to treatment or some sort of, you know, diversion. And there was no way to control that data or find out who had gotten, you know, what, and it just is a system that hasn't worked. So the legislature has been working, you know, the last year to try to come up with a solution. And the challenge is that there's a number of folks, legislators, that want drugs totally decriminalized. And then there's folks that want to lock everybody up. I think locking everybody up was sort of the war on drugs in the 80s and 90s, and I think we can all agree that didn't work. Total decriminalization has not been an effective approach either. So we're trying to find that pragmatic middle, if you will. We were very close. We had a conference bill that both the Senate and House leaders agreed to. It came to the floor the last day of the session, and it didn't get enough votes to move off the floor, mainly I guess what I'll characterize as Space Needle Democrats said they wanted it to be decriminalized. So we're back at the drawing board. A bill did not pass. And it's a challenge to find that balance or build that bridge, if you will, between having law enforcement able to deal with what's happening on our streets, but not lock people up in jail where they're not going to get good treatment. So to build that bridge from the law enforcement's contact with the individual to get them into treatment and diversion and other resources. We spent, in the operating budget this year, there's about $240 million for behavioral health services. And then in the bill itself, there was probably another $80 million. That $80 million is not, because the bill didn't pass, is not available. But as Kate, as you said, the governor has asked for a special session. The leadership from all four corners, both the Senate and and Republican and Democrats and the House Republican and House Democrats have been meeting, and I think we're getting close to some language. So the governor called a special session. He has to call a 30-day session, and that'll start the 16th. That doesn't mean we'll be in session. We'll come into session when there is an agreement between the four corners. And I think they're close, and I think it's, again, it's a tricky issue, and we're not alone, I think, as a state trying to deal with this issue. But it is more acute because of this Blake decision. But I think if we don't come up with a solution, it's a real challenge for counties and cities because they'll do things on their own. And yeah. So you could have one city, for example, where it's totally decriminalized, and another city where there's, you know, it's a gross misdemeanor, and they're going to lock you up for 360 days. And you just can imagine what kind of a confusion that's going to create both for law enforcement, for our communities, and for individuals. So I think everyone realizes in the legislature that we do need a solution that's a statewide solution. And I think that, you know, I think we'll get there.
Did I hear right, though? Is it at the end of June, on June 30th, July 1st, there would be no drug laws in place in the state of Washington if this doesn't get passed?
Yeah, Joe, that's correct, because the way the bill was written, well, the court decision basically legalized drugs. So we put this bill in, and the bill expires at the end of this fiscal year.
Okay.
And so that's June 30th. So we need to, you know, we need to take some action. Otherwise, that would be the case.
So Space Needle Democrats, are you talking about Seattle or resisting any criminalization at all?
Yeah.
I would think in Seattle, I mean, in Seattle, I would want some punishment for some offenses, certainly.
Yeah, and it's in the floor speeches on that Sunday night when the bill didn't pass, there was a lot of reference to the war on drugs, and I mentioned that. And
yeah.
I think all of us would agree that was racially biased.
It sure.
was not effective, and it, you know, it locked people up for just minor possession, and folks maybe remember those days. You know, between powder cocaine and
crack cocaine. Right, right.
And so there's a lot of memory of that within those areas, right?
Right.
Within the
sure.
what I call Space Needle Democrats. So
makes sense.
And I think the point is this is not that. What mm-hmm. we're trying to do is build a bridge, and we've learned from that.
Yeah.
But what's happening around the state where I mean, I talked to someone yesterday who there are people, you know, smoking fentanyl and shooting up across from grade schools and middle schools.
Yeah.
And that's just not appropriate. And
not
law
acceptable.
Enforcement is really yeah. challenging how to deal with that.
Right.
But I think there is a general acceptance among the legislators that incarceration by itself is not a solution.
Right.
I mean, this is an illness. This needs to be treated in a public health way.
Right.
And that understanding is there. It's the debate is how big is the stick, and, you know, to get folks in to, you know, use treatment and use diversion. So,
right.
And we're going to pass a bill, and I think it will be a very good start. But I think this is a policy that will probably evolve over years as we develop more treatment and diversion facilities, right, and get that capacity into our communities. So
that can take time and money.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
I had a quick thing. If anybody wants to write in, you can write to dj@kptz.org. If you have a question for Kate Dean, County Commissioner, or Steve Theringer, State Representative, I mean, we might have time in the next 15 minutes to answer a question or two. But Steve, Kate told, we talked about what didn't get passed and what you're going to have coming up. But what did get passed? What do you guys want to talk about there?
Well, one thing Kate and I have been working on for the last, probably three sessions.
Four sessions, Steve.
there's
four
this,
years
she's
of
keeping
our
score,
lives.
Steve.
This is actually a policy that Senator Hargrove passed, I think, in 92, that allows for rural counties to take 0.09 from the state sales tax and keep that and invest it in infrastructure, sewer, water, parks. And we added, as this bill has been kicking around for the last few biennium, affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we finally got that bill passed this year. It's going to the governor's desk, and it'll make a big difference. and I should let Kate speak to this, but one of the big things is with this extension now to 2054, Jefferson County, for example, can bond against that revenue.
Oh.
And then they can get dollars to help them with the, you know, with the Hadlock sewer or other infrastructure issues. So it's a big deal, actually. It's about, for the 32 counties or whatever, I think it's about $60 million a year that they get to use within the guidelines of the bill. One of the hangups is the chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the Senate really wanted, as did the majority leader in the Senate, wanted a better reporting, more clarity on how the jurisdictions were spending the money. And I think we've got that right in this bill. So it passed.
Super.
Yeah, and just to be clear, it's not an additional tax. It's a rebate that rural counties get from the state's portion of the sales tax. And we use that here for what's called the Public Infrastructure Fund. And that has funded broadband projects. It's funded water projects. It's funded the sewer in Port Hadlock. It is what kept the sewer project alive for 20 years before we finally worked with Representative Theringer for a big appropriation to get that built.
Got some federal money on that, too.
Yep, absolutely. So it's an important fund for us. It's a relatively minor chunk of the budget, but an important piece of policy that the state really helps us to invest in some rural infrastructure, which small communities generally can't generate the type of revenue that they need to be able to
and
install.
It's not really a little thing, but it's also a thing that probably was helped funded partially by this was the Jump Playground in
Playground.
Was that a separate thing?
Yeah, that comes through the Recreation and Conservation Office.
Oh, okay.
And it's funded, actually, there's a program called WWRP, Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program. Mm-hmm. And since I've been capital budget chair now for about, I think, 7 years, and that's been at like $80 million, $90 million, it's been creeping up. Last biennium, we had $100 million. This year, we got $120 million into that category. And that funds trails. It funds things like Jump. It funds, there's conservation easements, farm acquisition, just a number of things across the state. It's a great program. So really glad to have that record. But I think Jump was accessing those dollars.
Okay.
And some of our ARPA funds went into Jump, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, federal dollars.
Yeah.
So what else are you excited about this session, Steve?
Well, in another capital investment, as folks know, the city of Port Townsend is trying to replace its water line, which is a pretty old water line.
Right.
And it
down from the mountains.
And it goes up and down over the peninsula as it comes to, you know, comes to Port Townsend.
Right.
So there's a key piece of property that we need to for the water line, and it also is going to work for the Olympic Discovery Trail as we move it out of Anderson Lake and so State Park. So in the capital budget, there's $750,000 to purchase that puzzle piece, if you will, which is kind of a key piece to help both the water line and the Olympic Discovery Trail.
Speaking of the trail, too, the State Parks budget did include construction of the trail through Anderson Lake State Park. So we're starting construction on the piece just north, and then we'll get section in the park, and that'll be the next section south of there. So
right, and that's actually, again, WWRP money that's funding that trail piece in the Anderson Lake State Park.
Cool. I'm just off the top of my head. I spitball ideas all the time, so you have to forgive me. But Anderson Lake itself is that algae problem, and I mean, can the water line, if it goes through there, can it just dump some fresh water in there occasionally just to perk it up a little bit?
Well, we're separating out the water line is separate. It's further, I think it's further west, actually.
Okay.
This is the trail that's going through there, but that was one consideration, whether we want more public access to a place that's got that problem. But
I understand that water goes in there, it just doesn't go out.
Yeah.
And so there's not flow through.
We could do a whole show on Anderson Lake State Park. We should,
because
there's a fascinating story there, actually.
All right. I'd love to hear more about that. Yep. But let's get let's continue with the legislative session. What else did you guys pass, and did the
governor in the capital budget, again, I should probably let Kate ask some questions, but there's been this program, Trust Land Transfer, where we come in with the state budget bond money and purchase properties that are not timberland, right, that's not really is commercially viable and has some other natural resource value. And there's been a number of those. Devil's Lake is the one I'm speaking of in Daybob. And last biennium, we kind of suspended that program. There was a lot of work. I think Commissioner Eisenhower worked on it quite a bit. And they came back to us. We passed a bill that sort of, I think, gave more structure to that program. So we were able to get $5.2 million for Devil's Lake. The total is about $22 million for the trust land transfer. And so that'll preserve those properties now forever. We'll purchase that easement, and it'll be set aside. So that's a pretty big deal.
And that it then funds the purchase of other timberland to ensure that the revenue that comes off of those for schools and fire districts are kept whole. Those, what we call a trust, is kept whole, that there will be additional land made available for harvest.
So some's preserved and some is for harvest.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And so DNR is doing what Jefferson County is trying to do, which is saying, you know, we have all this forest land. For better or for worse, we fund things like schools from harvest, which is problematic, a topic for another show.
No kidding.
And, you know, but
it's not right.
It's a topic rich environment here.
And controversy.
And an environment rich topic.
Yes. I was really interested in the carbon bill that the legislature considered because, like I said, Jefferson County, like DNR, is trying to say, hey, what's the best use for these lands? Are there other revenue sources, for example, the sale of carbon, or monetizing other ecosystem services that land can provide? So I was pretty excited about, what was that bill number, 1789. And it's interesting, you know, there can be a lot of excitement around bills and they die kind of unexpectedly. And, you know, because I'm not on the inside, I don't see how it is that they die. There was a proviso passed instead, which will let DNR study value of ecosystem services. But what's your take on future legislative action around sale of carbon? We're such a rich state with forestry, and it's a little problematic.
Yeah, so the Climate Commitment Act is where it's cap and trade system. So basically, polluters have to buy, if they can't reduce their carbon output, they have to buy credits. And the first auction for those credits was in March and raised about $300 million. Wow. Over the biennium, we budgeted $1.9 billion because we think that's what the number's going to be. And part of those dollars, there's a real, within the bill itself, which passed 2 years ago, there's a pretty clear structure about some of it goes for tribes and for overburdened communities that are really impacted by, you know, pollution and, you know, carbon challenges. Then there's
rising sea levels, et cetera.
Well, and then there's a big, there's about 15% of the funding goes to tribes. And so we were able to use, in our capital budget, we used about $350 million of that. And part of that is what's funding this this proviso to, one, it's going to, there's $70 million in there to purchase land, timber land that is being threatened to convert, come out of the working landscape into housing. Mm-hmm. And so that will hopefully be a bank at some point where we do these trust land transfers, because we, as Kate mentioned, we want to make sure we don't lose the working landscape, but we want to preserve the ones that have natural, you know, qualities or conservation qualities. So there's a transition that, or a swapping that has to go on there. So the Climate Commitment Act dollars are going to help. To the ecosystem services, it's interesting. The private sector has been doing that, and they're getting some credit, right? They're going onto the market and selling credits because they're sequestering carbon. The DNR is not allowed to do that. This bill was going to do that, but it got hung up in the, as does timber usually, between, you know, the extractive community and the conservation community. And so we ended up slipping in a proviso that allows them to do that work and analyze, you know, what that market would be like, what the impact would be. But I think there's, as that market develops, as this sale in March showed us, there's some revenue there that can be actualized for the beneficiaries of the trust that the DNR manages for. So this proviso language will give them that ability to study that and see what that market's like and how that might actualize itself.
Mm-hmm. But you also mentioned housing, because you're talking about forests being cut down for housing. What do you have in the state budget or in the state that state recently passed that has to do with housing?
Yeah, housing is a huge issue, obviously, and it's a bipartisan issue, actually.
Yeah.
There's challenges. We, in the capital budget itself, there's $400 million for the Housing Trust Fund, which is the major competitive grant program for housing. There's money for owner-built housing, which is basically, you know, Habitat. Mm-hmm. There's money, again, there's carbon money. We're using some of the CCA money to help folks stay in their home by purchasing heat pumps, getting away from the gas, mm-hmm. weatherizing their homes, right. You know, all this that would reduce their carbon footprint, right?
Right.
And there's about, in those two categories, there's about $120 million. And then there's a program that actually Port Townsend uses called CHIP. It's Community Housing Infrastructure Program, and that's helping them run the sewer lines out to the development over there on Rainier. So,
oh,
and yeah. what happens is a lot of the housing
Vista
money,
or the apartment building.
Yeah, what's it called? Vista.
Evans Vista.
Evans yeah. Vista. Okay. So, the a lot of the housing money builds the units, mm-hmm. but doesn't build the sewer and water that gets right. that helps develop that land. So this right. that program. We funded it at about $40 million last biennium. There was over $100 million in requests, and so
wow.
we bumped it up to about $70 million this time.
Wow.
So
it's a need.
Yeah, huge need. And yeah. The other area with the, you know, that was a major focus is, and we talked briefly about this around Blake, is behavioral health and the need to get more. We're building what's going to be close to $1 billion forensic hospital to replace Western State down at Steilacoom.
Wow.
And that actually, that's a big chunk of the capital budget.
Uh-huh.
And so, so we split it between two biennium, but we have a teaching hospital that we're building in Northgate with the University of Washington. It's going to come online probably the end of this year that will help develop professional behavioral health specialists and psychiatrists, and it'll be one of six in the nation.
And, oh wow!
And so it's kind of addressing all these issues. And one of the things I realized in building this budget, so we're spending money on behavioral health and housing. We need to get upstream on these issues. We need to get more preventative, and so. We've made a large investment in early learning facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the ELF program, it's called, was around $40 million, and we put it up to $100 million this time. And just a link, so folks may remember the capital gains tax, the state Supreme Court said that it's legal,
mm-hmm.
and the way that tax is structured is the first $500 million goes into early learning, and then anything above that goes into the school Common School Fund. And so we got about $190 million out of that went into common schools. That's going to help Brennan and Quilcy and some of these other smaller districts are going to be able to use that fund to do repairs and stuff that they wouldn't have been able to do.
For schools. That's great.
So I kind of wandered around there, Joe, but...
No, it's fine. It's fine. We're almost at the end here. We got about 2 minutes exactly. Kate.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about ferries, something that's of great interest here. And, you know, ferries are a part of our complex transportation system, and we've been dealing with challenges with the Hood Canal Bridge closures, which got scaled back to a much more manageable schedule for us. But now hearing that the Bainbridge Ferry is going to be down during Wooden Boat Festival.
Wow.
And how this all ties in with the construction of ferries is that we still only have one boat on our run because of the shortage of total boats in the fleet. Our second boat is
right.
taken away elsewhere. So I was really pleased to see that there's funding for up to five new boats to be built. So thanks for that work.
Yeah, that's an important step. And as we were talking before the show, we had funding to start building these boats in the last biennium, but there was language that said they had to be built in Washington by Washington contractors, and they could not put together a package to build these boats. So we basically lost 2 years in this cycle. This legislation that's funding this has opened it up to a national competition, which I'm sure we'll use part in-state contractors, but we lost a couple years in getting these boats built. Some of the Climate Commitment Act money is going to go in to help build these ferries because they'll be electric ferries.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
But we lost a couple years, and so it takes a couple years to build the boat, so we're going to be out probably about 4 years now before we get
the boats. Well, Steve Theringer, thank you so much for joining us here today. Kate Dean, thank you for being my co-host. I'm Jim Burke. This is KPTZ 91.9 FM, and this has been County Connections.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Got a song here from the National. We've gone local, we've gone state, and now we're going national. I got to turn this on. Hang on.
Summer sun around.